woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
Oh, it's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
Found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Well, Rope Bay Stacks and Jacks, I'm Tom Allen. This is Matt Weber on the board. I also have Mr. Jack Silverman on the board. We have Mr. Kevin O'Neill. S&P Futures down 350, Dow Futures down 14. NASDAQ Futures down 21, but in case you were under a rock yesterday, you missed the S&P's up 28. Dow Jones up 249, NASDAQ up 64. Huge rally in virtually everything. Oil, gold, you name it. It was up huge yesterday, so it was a good day for just about everybody along the market or along anything. I know I've been waiting for gold to move for like a real long time, and all of a sudden the last week, I don't know, big guy upstairs must think I'm out of it or something, but no, we're in a tremendous... few weeks in the precious metals, a little silver's backing up a little bit today, and if you stuck long oil, had a huge day in there as well. So the XLE is actually making a comeback, and so basically, it's good to be long right about now. The question is, how much do you hedge it, and how much do you protect it, and how much do you think it's going to go to the sky? But Kevin, how are you?
Good morning. I'm doing fine. Hey, have you voted in the primary yet?
You know, I seem to recall. I'm not trying to age myself, but today I feel young, Kevin, and so should you. Very young.
Why should I feel young?
Because we've got like 20 years left, and we could still become a pitching coach in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, one dose of my arm in its prime, and they would have said, "Get that man away from our pitchers."
You know what it's all about? You know, I don't think Billy Connors, who might have been the best pitching coach ever, was he ever a pitcher? At a major league level?
Well, let me put it this way. It isn't just how hard I could throw. It's how accurately I could throw.
What you lack in accuracy, you make up for in lack of speed.
Hey, that's right. No, you know what? I could play first base in 16-inch softball barehanded, go a season or more at a time without a drop and dig all kinds of stuff out of the dirt. But, you know, if we were starting a double play, anybody on my team would say, look, if you can get the easy force out at second, do it, but don't rush it.
Yeah,
it's going in the left field.
So you were the Steve Garvey of softball.
More like the Chuck Knobloch of first base.
Ah, well, that's...
Or the Steve Sachs.
What my buddy Tom?
Steve Sachs, since it popped into my head. Good, it's actually a Tom Lasorda story, but if you remember, like Knobloch did for a long time, Sachs had a case of the yips where he kept throwing the ball into the stands from second base. And he was on in the same infield with Pedro Guerrero, who was just a butcher at any position they tried to play him.
Well.
A great hitter, but they couldn't. So they get this game that Guerrero gave away late with just some really bad errors. And they're in the locker room, and Lasorda is just annoyed as can be. And he's going, you know, Pete, what are you thinking out there? And Guerrero says, I'm praying, Skip.
That's it.
And now Lasorda's really mad. He says, you're praying? What are you praying for? He says, I'm saying, dear Lord, please don't let him hit the ball to me.
Yeah, well, you know what? That's the way I feel on softball.
Now Lasorda's really fuming. And he says, anything else? And he says, yep, don't let him hit the sacks either.
Let's just say, Kevin, when I stride out to the mound on Sundays, I've yet to make my debut, maybe next week. First thing in my mind, do not hit back to me. Now, there was a time when I would gauge how well I pitched by how many balls I got, because I would force guys to go up the middle because I didn't give them a cookie on the inside or the outside. So when if you put it right down the middle, a lot of times guys have to come up the middle, and there's a lot of people there, including me. With the time, I was pretty limber and pretty tall, so I would like them coming right back at me. Not anymore. Now that's what the other guys are out there for. Just saying.
There are stages of aging for a softball pitcher. One of the first one is youth, where you're saying, you know, hit it back to me.
Yep.
And then the next gauge of aging is to see how many balls you can avoid so you don't get hurt. And then
yes. The
final one is to see how many balls you can just make sure don't come your way in the first place.
That's exactly. Well, remember my buddy Tom
Tracy. Pitch him inside, Tom. Pitch him inside. Dan's over at third.
That's right. Well, Dan can still play, which is interesting. Although, you know what? He does tell me real quick on this. For those that don't, but I was never a 12-inch player, but Dan has played a lot of 12-inch now because he plays these tournaments around the. And, you know, Dan's 62, but he's in the. He's an over 60.
Or as you and I call him, a kid.
Oh, yeah. Well, he's in the. As soon as he made it to 60, in your 60th year, you can play in these tournaments, and you got to send your license into the central thing and a whole bit. Of course, everybody was dying to get them. But, you know, they have. This is so bizarre, Kevin. They have. In 16 inch, they try and use the really high end bats, but they're no good. I mean, as a matter of fact, there's been studies now that says you can buy a $120 or $150. Super bat for 12 inch and actually hurts you in 16, because of because the ball needs to actually be clubbed. You can't. It's not like a baseball. You know, it's got
to
be
right. I found a legal bat. That's a good story too. You finish yours. I'll tell you good story.
But Dan says that the difference between the 90 mile an hour bats and the 120 mile an hour bats are dramatic. And these are for people over 60. So he says, if I'm playing third base, he goes, first of all, in all the leagues he plays in, you can only use the 90 mile an hour bats. Which he says are pretty sane. You know, they come off hotter than 16 inch, but still it's, you know, you can catch the damn thing. He says, when you go to these tournaments and the guys are even older, they get these high end bats. He goes, I have to play. He says, I play like even with the bag. Dan always played pretty shallow, as you remember, in a regular league. He says, I'm 8 feet, 8-10 feet behind the bag. That's how much difference they make.
Well.
And he goes, the pitcher has got he's got the cup on for sure. He's got the face mask and probably has a chest protector and maybe shin guards.
Yeah, speaking of the cup on, did you see Wilson Contreras last night?
Yeah, and then those guys, from what I know about today's sports, I don't think they use the cup. I think they use that banana thing. It is not nearly as, if you catch one direct on, shall we say, I don't think it's near as good as the old ones. But you can move around a lot faster, so if you move around faster, maybe you don't get it as often, but once in a while, see Rizzo laughing his behind.
Hey, look, there's not a gracious way to take one there.
No, God, no, it's not. But my buddy Tom Tracy, when we're talking about a basketball player, I'd say, Tom, is he any good? He goes, well, he's small, but he's slow. That's not a good type of thing.
Sounds like a Bulls draft pick.
Yeah. No,
I think they did pretty well.
Well, you know, I just, the idea that you have all these people paying all this money for a crap team, and now you're going to, somehow or another, that team needed to do better than one 18-year-old kid. I just think, you know, I mean, they're that far away. They're 3-4 players away. I don't see how, I mean, at least you can see what New Orleans did. They got rid of a sniveling superstar for essentially a whole team. You could see where other people were making moves to do something, and they pick an 18-year-old. So even if he is really good, he's 3 years away. And how many guys that they have now that are decent are still going to be there? Hopefully Markkanen, but he seems to have issues.
Well, they'll have Markkanen, and they'll have what's his name, the guard that they just signed to a long-term contract.
The other point guard that now they're not going to play point guard. This guy's going to.
Well, Chris Dunn hasn't worked out for him, but. Come on, why am I blanking on the guys who also came in that trade with him?
The guy, because of the V. Manny Weber was on the thing, he'd know, but. Anyway.
I think it's Zach LaVine.
Zach LaVine.
Thank you. thank you. Zach LaVine.
Just pipe in, Jack. Whenever you got an answer, we don't have, bud. So, how did Jack, now that you're on, how did New Orleans get all those picks? It looked like they picked the whole team. They had the number one, right? No,
yeah.
Who did they get from.
I mean, they got very lucky with the number one overall pick.
Right. But then they gave away Davis for how many more people? And how many of those guys were going to Atlanta? There was like, they kept going across the tape saying, these guys are allegedly in trades with Atlanta. How did that all end up?
Yeah, so they're at the number four.
They can't do a trade yet.
Well, yeah, the trades technically don't go through until July 6th, but the Pelicans got the number four overall pick from the Lakers. And then after that, they traded the fourth overall pick to the Hawks. They traded back for like the eighth pick, the 17th pick, and then a couple more picks. And I think it was just picks that were traded in that deal. Maybe a player, but the rest of the players that the Pelicans got were just picks that they've accumulated and then players from the Lakers.
All right, so they got the number four pick for Davis, then they got rid of the number four pick for three other picks.
Yeah.
So they basically ended up with a whole team.
Pretty much, yeah.
Eww. That's pretty good.
Can be.
Yeah.
If they use them wisely, yep, very well can be.
All right, Kevin, what do you make of what's going on? Huge run-up yesterday with the Fed and the guy David was talking about there. Kept saying about the ball-headed guy. The guy was back on CNBC last night, and he was – I should have gotten his name, but I just was listening to it. And he – well, I don't know, Kevin. He says this is incredible. We are now in a position where we're trading the negative. The worse the economy gets, the more the market wants the Fed to pour more money in. And even though it's not helping the economy at all, it's pouring money into the system and the stock market's going up. He says the last thing the bulls want now is the market to turn around and grow. I'm going to tell you that is so counterintuitive for me. I can't even think about it, Kevin. I mean, I know in the short term, pouring money in helps the but they actually think this can be a 20-year game where the economy doesn't do anything and the market goes straight up because the Fed pours extra money without inflating anything, which it already has, but.
Which it already has is the key to that phrase. Yeah, I don't know where it's going. You talked with Lou yesterday and one of the things when you were talking about Iran was, you know, how situation by situation the policy is, and I want to talk about that eventually today because I disagree somewhat with Lou on that.
Go right now.
But I think in terms of the Fed, that's exactly what they're doing. If they're just, you know, what do we need to do this month? There doesn't appear to be a long term to it.
What do you make of these guys from Facebook and a bunch of other companies coming out and saying they're looking for an alternative currency? And I swear it, there's two guys, two old grumpy guys, you come on Wednesday and Friday, and I'm here all the time, that have talked about the way the payments mechanism is going. In other words, everybody having to know everything everybody does, no cash, none of this other stuff, the direction we're headed, that there was absolutely no doubt in my mind, Kevin, that someplace, somewhere, this is what economists can do, and I consider myself kind of a half-assed economist because I did some stuff in good courses with good people. You can never, the idea that an economist can predict whether the economy is going to grow 3% or 3.5%, you got no more chance of that than somebody buying lottery tickets at the corner. But because you don't know the timing. But what you do know, if you're a behavioral economist, which I'd like to think I am, you can look at what's happening and what direction the things are going, and you know where how people are going to react to it a little bit. I mean, I could never have told you 30 years ago what year Cabrini Green was coming down. But I absolutely could have said, look at the tax returns, look at the way this area is growing towards this end, and someday, somewhere, it'll find an excuse to get these people out of here and put people in here that are going to pay a lot more. And sure enough, Kevin, it happened. I mean, I'm pretty darn near 100% on those kinds of predictions. I mean, if you ask me which year, which lot to buy, you know, I don't know about that. But I'm telling you, if everything that goes from overseas back and forth, now I happen to have some experience with our regulators are incredibly horrible at actually taking care of money that goes overseas and so forth in the alleged war, but they come down on their own citizens like there's no tomorrow. So there's no doubt in my mind that if they're going the direction they're going, that there's going to be some sort of an alternative payment mechanism worldwide that is against companies. This is like reading the sovereign state of ITT 30 years ago when I read it, or 40 years ago. Some of these governments, they just get in the way. You hate to to say that, Kevin, but sometimes they do. Now, if somebody from India wants to buy something from China and doesn't want anybody to know about it, you know what? I have no problem because I don't care if the Chinese government knows what somebody in China does. I'd rather they didn't because they're a totalitarian regime. So how many people in two days, how many swinging idiots are from the Senate and representing the Congress from both sides of the aisle, male, female, black, blue, you name it, are out there immediately dropping all other things and they got to regulate this currency? Why? The thing's 5 years from working and they already got to get their fingers in it. Wait a minute. We can't control those people. What's the problem? We can't let anybody do that.
Well, there's also a misconception about how blockchain technology works. It's, you know, the idea that there is no trail of who owns or how currency has changed hands is just completely false. In fact, the way blockchain works is there's a total record of all of that.
Right.
Now, it might be information that's out of the control of the Fed. Okay, I get that. But it's not like it doesn't exist. So the idea that everybody can just get away with, hiding out from the feds, I would imagine that those records are subject to the same subpoena rules as everything else.
What makes you think this is going to be blockchain?
It's all other data.
What makes you think it's going to be blockchain? Nobody said that.
Well, nobody's building anything that's not on blockchain.
Well, but I'm saying it could be. I have no idea what's going to be, but maybe it's not going
to
be.
Because there has to be a central authority. There has to be, with a cryptocurrency, there has to be a way to tell when you claim ownership of a block of currency, there has to be a way to control it and to say, so that I can't say, oh no, I own that.
What if they issue paper?
What if they do?
Well, then how do you control
that?
How do you control that?
I don't think you do.
Well, that's the beauty of it, in my mind.
Because paper is, it's physical, whereas when you're talking cryptocurrencies, it's reliant on the integrity of the data and the integrity of the chain of ownership.
Okay. I guess the ability, however, of the Fed or whoever to demand who's on a payment from India to Botswana, I mean, where do they get that right?
As of now, they only have the right. The Fed has the right to subpoena records, so they can. Not the Fed, but the federal government has the right to subpoena records, which means they have to go to a court and convince a judge that that's justified theoretically. In the case of the banking regulations, they have the right to impose regulations on banks that require them to report, which we know. They do on large currency transactions that goes back to the 1980s and some money laundering legislation related to drug trafficking.
And you know what?
That has now been expanded to just about anything else.
Well, here's my concern with that. I know that people can say, well, where does this guy come for? A trader, money manager, and so forth, and he's obviously in the system. Kevin, in all the years of putting their nose up, you're in my ass, and everybody else we know, and watching everything they do, has the drug trade gone down or up?
Best I can tell, it's gone up.
That's right.
So it's been ineffective. But boy, we can use it for everything else, can't we?
We sure can.
So if you don't like that, then you should be voting libertarian.
Well, I often wonder, from sitting on a small board. It wasn't a small board for this issue. CBOE was a serious place, but given the fact that I can't imagine anybody, Kevin, the further intrusive you get, I don't see how I've never seen anybody come back. Have you?
No, of course not.
And the more people you hire, the more intrusive.
And as it gets handed off, the question is, do you trust the people that get that power? So, and aren't we seeing that battled now? I remember a lot of conservatives saying, and this goes back to the days when Hillary Clinton was inevitable after the Bush years, I remember a lot of conservatives who, when the Patriot Act was passed and then renewed, that they were saying, "You really want to give that much power to Hillary Clinton?" And how much, you know, how much executive branch power did the Obama administration absorb? Well, you know, they thought they were going to pass that on to Hillary Clinton, and it turns out they passed that precedent on to President Trump, and now they're all of, you know, a lot of Trump's executive actions are being challenged in court because they don't like him. So, yeah, it's, you know, there is a lot of slippery slope to this.
Well, I'm going to say that individuals aside, I'm going to say that bureaucracy could care less who's in office. They every day they have to get a little more intrusive. If we're looking at this, we have to look at this. If we're looking at that, and we got to go further and look at this. Because this is a way to get around us, of us nosing around in all the file cabinets. People can put stuff in the desk drawer. Well, that means we got to be able to look in the desk drawer. I mean, it's just a bureaucratic mind. And I actually thought, I mean, I felt, because I said I would have voted for him if there was only two, even though I can't stand him in personally. Trump, I actually thought that he would come in and just go from place to place. And he actually did help my firm and my industry with the, getting rid of that, the, fiduciary rule that's coming out of the Department of Labor of all places. Department of Labor, you have nothing to do all day except worry about stuff in the financial area. And it, I mean, somebody needs to walk in there and just say, "You guys are all fired. I don't know what you're doing here." But we obviously don't, need you for labor work, and you're not in the SEC, so get the bleep out of here. I mean, I actually thought Trump would, and he's done some of that, okay? But like anybody else who's president, stuff that happens around the world starts taking your time, and you lose what you're trying to accomplish. I mean, obviously, if he's worried about Iran every day, he's going to stop worrying about, you know, some intrusive thing the SEC does, or somebody else, because there's only so much in a day. Even for him, even if he stopped tweeting and stopped...
I'll give him credit for one thing. He multitasks better than most. He's, you know, very short attention span when it comes to
things. What do you figure the guy sleeps 2 hours a night?
He moves around quickly. You know, like what he does or not. He definitely keeps a lot of balls in the air and keeps
But these people, I mean, but once the bureaucracy gets to that level, you just have to walk in and say you're all gone. These are the new rules, and maybe you can reapply under the new chief, but... Because otherwise, they're relentless, Kevin. There's no. But I don't see how even as a board member, if your security is, you know, five guys walking up and down a sidewalk, even if you think that four guys makes more sense or no guys really, you're never going to vote for them. You can't be the person who votes for less security. The thought of what if something happens and my name's in the paper. You can never go back. Unless there's absolutely some massive, the whole place is broke or something, you have to go down to three guys. Or otherwise, it just will never happen. I mean, if we in Iran, if all of a sudden he and was ever in charge of the place, talk about this after the break. S&P futures down 5, Dow futures down 29, NASDAQ futures down 26. Be right back.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments, You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe. Jack Silverman, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We have Mr. Kevin O'Neill on the line. S&P futures now down 7. NASDAQ futures down 2750. As we're leaking a little bit lower here. The Dow futures down 34. Again, we had a big move up yesterday, but still we're starting to take a little chunk out of it now, 25% of it. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 2. Call that flat. FTSE up 12.2%. CAC around up 5. Call that flat. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei down 204. They've been up huge the last couple of days. This is a little bit of a setback, down a whole percent. Shanghai still up, however, up 14 points, 0.5%. Hang Seng down 76, it's only 0.2. Here's some numbers here, though. We had some big refinery explosion on the East Coast, some big refinery place. So we've got RBOB gas is up 6 cents, the $1.84, still nowhere near the 205 it was a while ago. We got oil up 52 cents, 57.99. Brent up 98, 65.34. So that spread is now... it's $7.80. So it's way, way below the 10 something it was a couple weeks ago. Natural gas, 220, so it's still really low. So nobody wants any natural gas. We've got gold up 79 cents, 1397. When we came in, it was over 1400 by like a penny. Silver down 22 cents, 1527. Copper 270. We'll look at the bonds. They've ducked back, ducked over 2% again. 2.028 10 years. So it was below 2 for a while. Let's come back up a little bit. What do you guys got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. This sports weather traffic update is brought to you by Luckbox Magazine. The Guide to Money and Probability is available on newsstands for $7.99 per issue. And Stocks and Jocks listeners receive a free digital subscription at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Be sure to sign up for that today. Awesome publication that you get for free. All kinds of issues already, Chief, on a Friday morning as far as the area expressways are concerned. But the biggest one happened earlier this morning. I-55 southbound at Weber Road is closed up to Route 53 and has been for the majority of the morning. All lanes are blocked for an investigation of a rollover accident in which a state trooper's vehicle was hit in a construction zone. So traffic is using the Weber exit and entrance ramps to navigate around the blockage. Apparently the person that struck the trooper's vehicle died in the crash, and the state trooper had minor injuries, but the investigation continues, and I-55 has been closed in the southbound side at Weber Road. Northbound side is highly affected by that as well, so that's out near Bolingbrook and in that area, southwestern suburbs. So avoid I-55 or get on a little bit later if possible because of that. Everything's okay on the Dan Ryan, I-57, and the Bishop Ford. We have a crash on the Eisenhower just at Central Avenue on the outbound side, so no issues on the inbound side. Edens and Kennedy are still looking good at this hour, as are the suburban tollways. Off the expressways, just one issue to report. Looks like there's a crash on northwest side, Howard and Harlem. But everything else looking okay out there. Weather today, lots of sunshine early. Then we supposedly have some clouds and some showers rolling in later on this afternoon. Could see a thunderstorm as well. We'll go up to a high of 67. Right now it is crystal clear and 57 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny with a high of 101 today. Right now it's clear and 78. In sports, Cubs have won two straight. They came from behind last night, down 3-0 early to the Mets to beat New York 7-4. The story, though, was they called up the number 4 overall prospect and one of their top pitching prospects, Adbert Alzolay, who came in relief and pitched 4 innings of 1 earned run ball, earning the win in relief of Brandon Chatwood. And made a nice Major League debut, walking just one guy as well in that one. White Sox were off yesterday. They're at Texas tonight, 7:05 p.m. start. Diamondbacks lost to the Rockies, 6-4. And the 2019 NBA draft was last night. No surprise, Zion Williamson went number 1 overall out of Duke to New Orleans. So he will now be the face of the franchise since they just traded Anthony Davis the other day. The Bulls drafted number 7, and they took Kobe White, point guard out of North Carolina. With the 7th pick. The Suns had the 11th and 24th picks in the first round. They took Cameron Johnson out of North Carolina with 11, and Ty Jerome out of Virginia went number 24 to the Suns. The Bulls' second round pick was a center that they took 38th overall out of Arkansas, Daniel Gafford, to the Bulls. Chief.
I'm looking at Phil Regan's career. When's the last time somebody did 134 innings as a reliever? No starts.
So go look up Mike Marshall.
Yeah, probably. In 1966, with no starts, he was 14-1 with 21 saves.
And Regan's name was nickname was
the Vulture.
The Vulture, because he used to swoop in and steal wins from people.
1.62 earned run average. That's a year. When they have the team here, when they put TOT, what does that mean?
TOT?
Yeah.
I don't know. Young team?
No, I mean, it must be when it's L.A. Dodgers, L.A. Dodgers, TOT, L.A. Dodgers, CH, Chicago Cubs. Who the hell's TOT?
TOT would be the total season if, in the case of a, if he split it between two teams.
I would guess. I would think you are correct. Anyway, Kevin, what we were talking about is, it's hard to come back on this stuff, and when people start pointing fingers at Iran, which, you know, deserves to have some fingers pointed at him. The entirety of what's going on over there. I mean, when did proxy wars start? Like when the Neanderthals were running around the world, or what? This idea that we're feeding the Saudis, who this guy can't stand, this new guy who killed the Iran back in these poor guys in Yemen, which is the biggest humanitarian disaster, and yet we can't wait to stop selling arms over there to kill more people. How many times can you bomb the same rubble, for God's sake? So we got this proxy war going. I mean, does there always have to be a proxy war someplace for big guys to sell arms to? I mean, is this part of our future? It's obviously part of our past, starting with the Spanish Civil War, for God's sake, that I know about. But I'm sure there were ones before then. So now the Iranians and the Saudis are fighting there, like they've hated each other forever, because one's Sunni and one's Shia, among other things. And I don't see how this, the area is just not, they have population pressures, they have economic issues, you know, what's the unemployment rates, God knows what. I mean, there's issues in that area. I don't know how do we solve all this stuff. I think Trump at least realizes we can't.
Yeah, so just to finish off the thought on, government intrusiveness, we do have an Inspector General report due out any time that has been looking into, how warrants were issued through the, requested through the FISA court. So that could slap people back a little bit. I don't know how much it will. But we'll see. I've been kind of withholding comment on that whole, the whole investigating the investors, investigator stuff until we see that. But shifting to Iran, a couple of things. I think Lou is right. I absolutely believe that he's right when it comes to, Trump wanting to get the rest of the world to step up and do their part. And especially when it comes to the Middle East, because we have developed so many oil resources in the United States over the last 10 years that we aren't as dependent. Now, nobody wants nobody wants prices to spike or anything like that that could happen if oil shipments out of the Middle East get paralyzed. But the United States is in a way better position to survive it than a lot of European countries, and certainly China is very dependent on oil from that region. So and a lot, in India, a lot of places are. So I think Trump's attitude, but the idea, Lou's comment, if I have it right, and he can certainly correct me if I'm wrong, was that Trump reacts to everything, on a situation by situation basis, and I think he does a fair amount of that. But this has been a consistent theme going back to his campaign. This is not, this is totally within context of him to be saying, it's not up to the United States to be the policeman for the Middle East anymore. That it's other people's responsibility.
I have a book in my home that I started reading, and even if you want something to put you to sleep on your worst night where you can't sleep, this one's a toughie. It has to do with American history, history of American involvement in the Middle East. And Kevin, we've been there since 1785 or some number. We sent pirates to Tripoli, or naval ships to Tripoli, or some damn place. I mean, we're there every 5 years. There's some big deal going all the way back like a couple of hundred years. I mean, it's not.
Yeah, and I don't think we're going to go away easily, but we're going to require others to step in and do more.
Well, I get that part, except the history of it is, and you can't go back, like Lou says. Who cares who did the boundaries years ago? And I agree with that. I mean, I can't dwell on that kind of stuff. But the idea that when you talk about like Germany or Japan not covering their weight of the army over in the defense of Russia over there, I'm going to say in 1961, if the Germans would have said, "Don't worry about it, we'll put up 95 divisions here, and you can send your guys home." Or the Japanese said, "No, we got our own stuff. Give us an atomic bomb and a bunch of planes and so forth." We didn't want the help. We wanted to control the world. Okay. Now he looks at it as now it's a cost, but if Cheney and the rest of these guys sat down with Trump, they'd say, "What are you doing? We want this oil to be like our own. It's not just an irritant." I mean, we fought two wars over there, so our oil companies pretty well could have their way in there and to keep the shipping lanes open. It was all about oil. Kevin, the Versailles Treaty, 95% of the known oil reserves ended up on one side of the table and then the other. I mean, it's one of the reasons why there was a World War II. I mean, this is not, I mean, there's a history here. For him, he at least needs. I'm not saying it shouldn't change. By the way, that in this modern world we should let people.
Sure, but he's fighting the trend. He's fighting the prevailing thought.
But we also have a president who he can't wait from the day. And again, this is a personal thing. It has nothing to do with. He can't wait. The day does not go by he doesn't basically bleep on Obama about something. Okay? And Obama's...
Okay, but what does that have to do with anything that's going on this week?
Well, what I'm saying is Obama's biggest mistake was to pull out of Iraq and just let the chips fall. So what you're saying is if we decide the Middle East is not our problem and we'll let Europe somehow take care of it and let the chips fall, that may be another huge mistake, just like Obama. Because, I mean, I think we are more rational than most in these areas. I don't know that you can pull out.
I mean, yeah. Now, one other thing I want to comment before you chase me out of here, and that is, the effect of sanctions.
You got 15 minutes.
They are really squeezing them. Right now, Hezbollah, Hamas, they're not getting their funding from Iran like they were.
Okay, now...
Because Iran just doesn't...
And we feel we have the right to do that, okay? And I'm not saying I'm not privy to this stuff. I'm saying we do. Okay, but last time we did that, we ended up in a world war with Japan. We squeezed the hell out of Japan. I'm not saying we shouldn't have. I'm just saying that ended up being the result, correct?
Saying if we can't sell our oil to anybody, then we can gum up the Straits of Hormuz and make it harder for everybody else to sell oil.
Exactly
to.
Right. And I'm not saying that's right or wrong. I'm just saying that that's... The whole concept is why do we get the right to do that when we have atomic weapons and we've used them? Nobody else ever has. I happen to think we are pretty careful with this kind of stuff, and I'm deeply American. But once in a while, you got to look at the other guy's thought process. I'm surrounded by people with nukes: Israel, Pakistan, India, Russia. Does Turkey have one or not? If Turkey has one, they're totally surrounded by people with nukes.
On the other hand, what's going to happen if Iran gets close to having nukes?
Well, I don't want them to have them. I mean, I'm not.
What's going to happen if they do get close to having nukes?
Well, all of a sudden, everybody's going to start bombing because they're not responsible in somebody's mind.
Pakistan is just not going to put up with it.
But Pakistan is responsible. India is responsible. I'd say the biggest chance of nukes being used.
Genie's out of the bottle there. Yeah.
But the biggest chance of nukes being used in our lifetime are going to be in a war between Pakistan and India, in my opinion.
Yeah, you're probably right. So nevertheless, as you start to look at it, I'm not defending anything here. I'm just telling you what's going on. Part of the conversation this week has been that, is question the effect of sanctions, and sanctions are what's causing the behavior we're seeing right now.
Yes, absolutely.
They, you like them or not, think they're a bad idea or think they're a good idea, they are working.
Or not working, if it ends up people getting killed. Right.
Okay.
You and I are not here on this show to solve these problems. All we're trying to do is bring out all the stuff, all the things that are in play here that other people may not have thought of. And when people write in to me, they, guess what? They help me. They bring me up to speed on stuff I haven't thought of. And that's our discussion here. We're not arguing foreign policy because neither one of us sit on the Senate some committee, or we're not on the Joint Chiefs of Staff. But the idea is there's a million things in play when this is happening. It's not just one thing. I mean, if it was, it'd be easy, right?
Yeah, it would be easy, but I'm not arguing to the contrary. I'm just trying to get the facts on the table as best I understand them from doing some research on it.
Well, there's this the idea that these guys are not in the international payment system. I mean, there's just facts that people need to know before they basically bitch at people. I mean, everybody bitched at Obama for sending cash to Iran. The reason why they sent them cash is because we've yanked them out of the international payment system. We literally couldn't give them a check, right? Or couldn't wire them the money because they're not, we yanked them out of the system. So we had to get them cash. Now, does that make giving them cash a good idea? I don't know. But at least if somebody says to me.
I don't know either, except that if it were such a good idea, then I have to wonder why they tried to do it on the, do it quietly and not tell anybody about it.
Because they know that the tweeters of the world, what are we doing giving them cash? Why we don't give people here cash? it makes intuitively no sense, Kevin.
So they just want to avoid criticism. An administration wants to avoid criticism.
They all
My
do.
Goodness, that's a futile task if ever there was one.
Well, you get away with it for a while. They keep trying. They keep trying. I mean, you know,
it's one thing I'll say about Trump is I don't think he cares.
We both knew kids that every night they tried to sneak out the back door, the old man was there slapping them upside the head, yet they do it five nights in a row. I mean, right? People keep trying. They keep trying to hide stuff. Stuff is stuff that's embarrassing, is top secret. I mean, how many times?
That was the administration that told us it was the most transparent in history.
There's no such thing. There's no such thing.
There is no such thing.
I mean, come on. I mean, there's always stuff that you'd say would you'd rather not get out there. I mean, there's stuff in every place. I remember, I mean, if there was any kind of rule violations by the wrong people at the CBOE, let's keep this under the let's talk to them. Let's make sure it stops right now. And we don't want anything formal on this. What happens all the time, Kevin? It's just human events, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's unfortunate, but it is. But the question is, all this stuff, all I keep saying is all this stuff, it's harder and harder to trade because of the news situation, but there's things going on all the time. Now we're pulling away from allies, maybe for the right reasons, because they're not holding up their fair share, at least in our opinion. We don't care about them. We don't protect them anymore. At the same time, we're looking at maybe a Middle East war when we had a tremendous, if ever such a thing, as a tremendous wartime experience with Bush 1 in the Middle East, when we did have to fight a war over there, when every one of our allies walked in right with us. And we looked like cankering geniuses like World War II. Okay, now, both of those things, to me, can't be happening at the same time. I mean, that's the part I have a problem with. Either one of them I don't have a problem with, but both of them together seem a little counterproductive, don't they?
Well, are we really pulling away from allies, or are we just asking them to do differently?
I'm betting if you ask the person on the street in Germany or France or Britain, they'd say, we're nowhere near as lovey-dub as we were 10 years ago, and who's this guy you got in office? I don't know that, but I would make that bet.
Actually, 10 years ago isn't right, because I do remember President Obama running on the platform that we had lost all respect in the world, and our allies didn't think we appreciated him anymore.
But he didn't.
That's longer than 10 years.
He didn't know how far. Well, okay.
Even though that was
make it 20 years. I mean, we're not. Let's just say if we come up with weapons of mass destruction tomorrow, we're not going to get people walking in there with us. I don't think. Since they think they really got rubed the last time. But
okay.
I mean the British, you know, they're all their reports of their stuff, they think that the entire, not Gulf 1, but Gulf 2 was totally fabricated by our people. I mean, I read parts of the report. I should have read the whole thing, but it's too damn long. But anyway, but this affects markets.
But the point there is nobody's trying to say that, so it's really kind of a moot point at this point.
Right. Well, I mean, if all of a sudden we decide, I mean, I'm certainly glad. And I will say this: I thought yesterday was one of the president's best days, in my mind, where he said, "You know what." Basically,
yeah, time for him to step on that message, but keep going.
Yeah, but basically said, hey, it's just a drone. There's nobody in it. Let's make sure before we start killing people over it. I mean, I actually thought, whoa, maybe there's hope.
This morning's news is that they were ready to do a counterstrike last night, and Trump pulled the plug on it.
Good for him.
But nobody knows why. Nobody knows what the...
Well,
but the military was ready to go.
I think when no matter who it is, I've always hoped this for the man, no matter who you are, when you get to that spot, and you're the last guy in the chain, your life has to change. Your mentality has to change. Doesn't mean you don't go forward, but all of a sudden, that decision, you're the only man in the world that gets to make it, Kevin, and it's gotta be a mind-changing experience, even for him. I believe
that. Sure it is.
I mean, you know, remember the part in the American President when they were doing something? Was it one of the Douglases? And all he kept saying is, well, all right, we're going to bomb this building. when's the least amount of people in the building? And they go, well, that'd be like the middle of the night. And he goes, how many people are in there? Well, there's probably 25 janitors. Let me get this straight. I'm going to kill 25 innocent janitors tonight? Why do I want to do that? You know, they ended up doing it, but he's like, it was somebody walks out, and one of the newspaper guy goes, that's very presidential. He goes, killing 25 janitors is the least presidential thing anybody could ever do. Right?
That sounds about right.
Yeah, I mean, but wasn't that the scene in the movie? I thought it was very powerful. And I think...
Anyway, I'm interested to hear how the overnight decision-making worked, because, you know, there had to be advocates for doing a strike. And
Bannon? Which side do you think Bannon was on?
Saying, don't do it, and I'd love to know, and I don't know if we ever will, but I'd love to know how those conversations unfolded.
I'm going
to
say Bannon was on the strike side.
I'm going to say Bannon wasn't in consulted.
What do you mean? He's a national security guy.
Bannon?
What's the guy's name? Who's Bolton? Sorry, Bolton.
Bolton.
The guy with the ridiculous
hair. Yeah, so Bolton might have been hawkish, you know.
Might have been.
He might have been.
Well, speaking of hawkish, are we hawkish about our Cubs now? We got this new young pitcher. We got this other guy ready in a week.
Did a nice job, didn't he?
Yeah, he got some stuff.
Yeah. The guy's a hot prospect, so, you know, I don't know how long he's going to stick around. They're going to... You know, once the rotation gets back to normal, they may want him to pitch every day. But you never know. You never know. And Madden has been known to use a 6-man rotation every now and again to give his pitchers a break. So we'll see how this shakes out.
Well, if you're seriously thinking about going deep in the playoffs, which I think they are, I mean, whether they do or they don't, I think they have some. They still have some issues scoring runs on tough days, which I think they need to address somehow. Maybe address... Is that guy who was super fast last year, is he still available?
I don't know.
But anyway, let's assume they're going to go deep in the thing. I think with the age of their pitchers, I think everybody should miss a start or two in August, don't you?
I think it's great, especially if you have a good alternative. So, yeah.
I mean, the Brewers finally showed that they're human, where they lost like 5 in a row. Other than that, you really couldn't do anything. You had to keep after those guys.
Now that you guys are on the track of baseball, we have a tweet in from David exploring the potential of the Rays potentially playing in Montreal for half the season.
Oh, yeah. What do you think of that, Kevin? You only got a minute.
I don't think... I think they're going to have problems with their stadium lease. But, so they'll be the Expos and the Rays. Would that make them the X-Rays?
Could you find them any further apart? Like, say, L.A. playing, you know... half their season in Providence, Rhode Island or something?
Yeah, don't know. And I know we're down to it. My opening question, did you vote in the primary? Because the voting to get the get down to 3 spots in the All-Star team for each position is today.
I've never voted in any of that stuff.
Yeah, I don't either.
People need to
get
all that.
They're calling it the primary, and then they have another vote to determine the starter out of those 3.
I just hope that
it's a big change this year.
I just hope that all of us live long enough for this 18-year-old kid to help the Bulls, so we can start buying tickets again. What do you think?
Well, I think he's kind of raw, but I also think he's incredibly talented, and because he's an ACC guy, I saw him throughout the year. He grew a lot. I don't think he's going to take 3 years to be effective.
I bet he won't either. Supposedly he had a huge.
But I'll bet you it's really a second. It's his second year when we.
Kevin, thank you very much. Have a nice weekend. Hope you don't get too much rain. It's supposed to rain again, for God's sake. SP Futures down 7, NASDAQ Futures down 28. Be right back, Mr. Carl Denninger.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous. No return on cash balances. May have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we are also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at ptisecurities.com or feel free to email me at john@ptisecurities.com. That's J-O-H-N at ptisecurities.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Something happening here.
Hello, welcome back to Dr. Jacks. I'm Tom Al. It's Matt Weber, Mr. Jack Silverman on the board over there. And we have Mr. Carl Dennett. SP Futures down 575. NASDAQ Futures down 26 after a huge update yesterday. Huge update in oil, huge update in gold, huge update in the market. Pretty much everything was moving to the north yesterday. Carl, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm sure you're 5% richer than you were yesterday morning at this time.
Well, I don't know about that, but... You know, hey, it was certainly an interesting day yesterday. I'll give you that much.
Well, there were three people on CNBC. This is after I asked you to come in, and every one of them was like a little Carl. But you can talk to what the three of them were saying. Very, very interesting combinations on all the stuff. One of them was a gentleman who was in the textile industry. And he was saying that I've mentioned this, you know, a bunch of times, which, you know, very forgettable times, about how if all of a sudden I was going to put together we did a bunch of people, like a railroad manufacturing firm, rail car manufacturing firm, or bus rehab firm or something in Chicago, basically how long it would take, because you don't have a building with 1,000 welding machines just sitting around and presses just waiting to get turned on and all the... and you don't have Tool and Die Micers sitting around having a cigarette and wondering what to do next. I mean, the idea of starting anything from scratch is really something. I mean, you got to find the right people, not only that can do stuff, but that can design what the area is supposed to look like. I mean, the most efficient way to do it, you know, how far the bathroom is away from the assembly. I mean, all that stuff from square one is a monumental job. And this guy was talking about, he said, well, what do you think about bringing some of the textile work back here? And the guy goes, what are you kidding? He goes, we're 25, 30 years away from making a dime of investment in that industry and all the looms and all the other stuff. Who the hell? I mean, the Chinese have been doing this for 25 years. It's not just free labor. It's massive amounts of investment in machinery and everything over there. I mean, we ship them the cotton. They do an unbelievable job. It's not just not paying people. It's the infrastructure and the machinery and everything to do that. No matter how little you pay people, you got to have the right machinery. You're not getting anything done. He goes, we're a long way from just saying, okay, start making the blue jeans over here. I mean, I figured you knew more about that. I mean, is this guy right? He's got to be.
Yeah, it's true, but here's the problem. We need to take this issue on, and 30 or 40 years of bad U.S. policy doesn't mean that you just walk away from the problem and say, oh, well, you know, gee, that's just the way it is.
Oh, I get that.
You can't do that. And that's, we keep looking at this as America has benefited tremendously from this so-called globalization and offshoring and free trade paradigm. And it's just not true. Right? I mean, what we've done is ship the distortions that we've created by doing this overseas. And that sounds wonderful right up until something goes wrong with it and the people who we shipped it to do something we don't like.
Well, but we,
and then all of a sudden, what do you do with it?
But you do have, I mean, the idea that somebody else is going to be, I'm not going to go down the road of just paying people less and keeping our thumb on them, which you and I both agree on. On radio, we're not supposed to agree, Carl. We agree on all this stuff, but the fact is, there's always going to be somebody somewhere. If you and I have two farms next to each other, and for some reason we can't stand each other and our dogs don't like each other, I'm liable to say one day, boy, Carl, you're one hell of a lot better. Even though I can't stand you, and by the way, if you turn around, I'll kick you in the behind. You're a much better cow guy than I am, and I'm a much better, it looks to me like I grow corn better than you do. Why don't I give you corn for milk? I mean, there's always going to be somebody that is better at something or more, you know, the weather's better at your place, you grow apples and you grow something else. That idea is what makes humans the way they are and what makes the commerce in this world go around. That people are better at different stuff and have advantages and things. So, I mean, I just don't think our people, and I know Mayor Daley, who I was talking to about this in the gym, had no idea what it took to start a firm. And once you let a Pullman go down with all the people and all the machineries and all the, you know, the one tool that's sitting there that you need for one thing on the axle hub or whatever, once you let all that go out the door, the idea of starting scratch is an incredible operation. And I don't think people have any idea of once you lose that, how it takes to, it's not it's like it's impossible. I mean, hell, we fought World War II in 3.5 years. It's not impossible, but it's a massive undertaking. And you need, no two people, even with you on my team, can come up with the capital to start up a steel mill or something. It's just not happening.
Yeah, that's true. This doesn't change the fundamental reality of this, which is that we did this stuff on false pretense. It was sold to the American public as having a certain set of characteristics. I mean, you know, look at NAFTA, just as one example. NAFTA was sold to the American public as a massive expansion of the American market into two other countries, knowing at the time that one of them had a very cheap labor pool. And the premise that we were sold this under was that cheap labor pool would become an expensive labor pool, essentially at parity with the United States and Canada, for that matter. And when that happened, that we would now have essentially a market that was three times the size of what it started with, right? Because that's, it was the premise. All right. that was a lie.
Was it?
And
was it?
It was absolutely a lie.
It's okay. It turned out, I'm going to push back a little bit. It turned out to not work out. I don't know that it was a lie starting out. People actually believed that, the University of Chicago and so forth, when I was there in school. Now, the thing
I don't think anyone who was actually pushing it fundamentally believed it, because it had never happened before in the history of the world.
Did here?
No, it didn't.
What do you mean?
It didn't.
We ended up, I think the mistake, Carol, if there is one, and again, you're more expert on this than me, but let me just lob something out there. The mistake was forgetting all about the late 1800s and early 1900s in this country, and the Pinkertons shooting people that went on strike and all that. People just assumed all that. First of all, they forgot about all the pain in there and all the people that lost their lives, lost their jobs and stuff, and actually becoming, and I'm not, this is not a big pro-union stance. The fact is there was a massive labor struggle here to get from point A to point B. And I know the Milton Friedmans of the world, because I had the guy in class, they all assumed that all that same stuff would happen other places. And it didn't. Labor never got their traction, whether it was too many people, whether the economics of it wasn't there, whether they just couldn't go up against, because instead of just going up against the Pinkertons at Pullman, you ended up with the National Guard standing behind the Pinkertons, which didn't...
Right.
But here, you had some sort of rule of law that said even the Pinkertons couldn't mow people down. There's no law like that in China. No law like that.
There's no law like that in Mexico.
Right. That's what I'm saying. So, I mean, were they really... I think what they did, I mean, instead of saying it was a lie, I'm going to pull back a little bit and say they did not realize how important the rule of law and have some sort of a government that was somewhat impartial, not totally, behind you, like we did here. That you can't assume a union's going to pop up in China, because they didn't, right?
Well, now, wait a minute. I'll push back on that a little bit,
okay.
Too. Okay. Anyone that believes, and you know, I mean, I've read enough of all the so-called theories and you know, the Friedmans of the world and such. If you actually think that Milton Friedman believed that, given all the corruption that he'd already seen, okay, remember we went through the whole thing with Nixon and everything else right before NAFTA,
yeah.
All right. If you think he actually believed that somehow a totalitarian communist government was going to just drop their communism and drop their totalitarianism, and it was just going to go away, somehow it was just going to magically vanish if you waved your wand, I would suggest that Milton Friedman was so stoned on 1960-style LSD that he shouldn't have been able to get out of bed.
I actually... Believe it or not, Carl, I was at a lecture of his on just that. Those guys, the economists of that era, we're talking the early to mid-70s, well, he's older than that, 60s he was around, they absolutely believe that if you could get economic freedom rolling downhill, that it would influence the politics and political freedom would follow. They absolutely believe that. Maybe not freedom, but they thought there would be improvement. They absolutely believe that. That you would not have if you ever got to a fully market free economy in China, that somehow that you would still have a dictator. They honestly believe that. Because I listened to the guy.
Well, you know what? I think that there is an awful, I mean, I think there's an awful lot of people that go out there and sell this kind of stuff in colleges and in other so-called educational institutions, with absolutely zero evidence to back up their assertions. You have 2,000 plus years of, you know, AD time on the clock, right? And we did at the time that all this was being put through. The last 30 is a pinprick, right? And in those kinds of measurements. And it had never worked before. Never.
I think,
and all of a sudden, we have these novel economic theories. Okay, you know, you get the same thing going on now. You got these guys pushing this MMT nonsense. okay? We can do whatever we want because we're a sovereign country and we have a sovereign currency, and it means that, you know, nobody has to actually buy our debt. We can just print as much of it as we want. This is the same kind of, there's no evidence for this. And what I want to see is this. I don't have any problem with experimentation, because experimentation is how we do science, right? You have a theory, you run an experiment, you see what happens. I've got no problem with that. However, when you do this, you sell it honestly to the American public and to policymakers, and when you're wrong, you eat the consequences of being wrong. You don't turn around and double down and shove it down the American people's throat and expect them to pay for it. We've been doing this now for the last 30 or 40 years. And by the way, anyone that thinks that the rule of law actually means something in this country, we have 100 years, 100 plus years, going back to 1890 at this point, of antitrust law. I just heard another one of these clown faces talking about this in the tech world, that, and he's another one of these well-known academics. He's a lecturer. He shows up in colleges and gives lectures, and you know, this is what he does. This is how he makes a living. And again, he says, you have to show price injury to consumers. No, you don't.
No, you don't.
The law does not say that. The law says any attempt to do X is a felony.
Okay, well, I think I know where we are in this. And I, by the way, even though I'm arguing with you vehemently, I'm agreeing with you. But to a point, because I think one of the mistakes we make, and everybody makes, is you assume to a certain extent that other people are going to react sort of the same way as you do. Now, we all do that a little bit. You may be less, because you're giving me grief about it. But, to this day, one of my good buddies who's on a board with me at the CBOE, an attorney, a guy named Mark Duffy, good man, this is years ago, and we're talking about, I don't know, it was Iran or some damn place, and we're having elections. And Mark says, you know, I said, what do you think of that? And he says, you know, they don't have 1,000 years of history since the Magna Carta, or 1,100 years now. They have no concept of the person who loses getting up and walking out peacefully. they have no concept of when you lose, you become the, what's the word, the loyal opposition. You go back in the Congress, you still do your stuff, you still promote your things, and you work harder for the next election. If you don't have any history of that, what's the point of having an election? So, I mean, I think the Friedmans of the world absolutely didn't understand, I'm going to say, the Asian mindset. We are very unique here, and we seem to think that if everybody gets the same chance, they're going to react the same way. And every time somebody thinks that way, from Milton Friedman to you to me or whatever, usually we're wrong, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, the reality is that what usually happens is if somebody gets an advantage like that, they use it.
Right. That's right.
And you know, so the thing is, that, you know, was what happened in China with the technology theft and the you know, the state sponsored subsidization, the abuse of the environment for profit, was all of that utterly foreseeable? Of course it was. Love Canal, anybody? Thank you very little. Yes, we grew up and we decided we're not going to do that sort of thing. You know, I grew up in a place where you couldn't swim in the water, you couldn't eat the fish, and your eyes stung all the time when you drove by the chemical plant. Like, that was my youth.
Yeah,
and we decided we're not going to do that anymore. But guess what? In the interim 20 or 30 years, we used that advantage.
And we killed a lot of people here.
We killed a lot of people here doing it, too.
Yeah. Well, right. But that's
now what happens. What makes you think that when we export that to someone else? And see, this is why I think Friedman was lying. I don't think this was a mistake, because he saw what happened here in the United States. Yes, we ultimately decided that not being able to eat the fish out of the water was a bad thing.
Right.
However, in the interim, we exploited the environment, and we didn't care who died.
Right, absolutely. Absolutely.
And guess what? He knew that even if at the end point, 100 years from now, China comes out of it and looks kind of like us in regards to their care for the environment, the interim 30 or 40 years is going to go the other way.
Kyle, you may have better things to do than listen to the show every day. We've had 3 or 4 economists on here from like around the world. My buddy Hal Snar, who I love, and I'll say, you sound like an economist. You sound like somebody who's got who just made what happens when you get paid for the rest of your life. You're an endowed professor, what do they call it? Not endowed.
You're tenured, yeah.
You sound like a tenured professor with this 30-year time frame, and don't worry, 30 years from now we'll clean up the river. Wait a minute, the rest of us are drinking out of the thing. I mean, you're right, the time horizon gets way different for these guys. There's no doubt about that. I'm with you. I don't know if that's...
Well, not only that, they don't care who gets screwed in the interim.
It's all the long run.
You know what? In the long run, we're all dead.
Well, that's right. That's right. Hey, the other question, the other guy who reminded me of you a little bit yesterday, as David said, this bald-headed guy, but he, not because you're bald, you're not. And I said, David, you can't say that. It's follically challenged. But anyway, for 2 days in a row, he came on CNBC. I don't know if you why, but he was talking about how, and again, you and I are not trying here to figure out where the market's going. You, because it's a sport, you're an investor. Me, because I'm managing money for people. I'm just trying to protect them on one way and getting out of the way the other way, which is tricky these days. He said the market now we've turned totally upside down, and that the entire bull case is the negative. That if the last thing they want is for the economy to pick up, where the Fed is going to say, we have to actually raise rates or cut back on the credit because there's too much of a demand for cash. And right now, he says the more we go down the rat hole, the more pressure on the Fed to just pour money out there, the better it is for the stock market, even though it's not the best for the rest of society. He goes, the entire bull case is negative. And he goes, I've never seen that.
Yeah, well, you know, this is what happens, though, when you allow and actually cheer on, and our government has done nothing but that. They discovered in the late 70s and early 80s, we found out what happens when you use loose monetary policy for 20 or 30 years, and then all of a sudden you have an externality that comes along that you put in place, which we did, by the way, by allowing, OPEC to come into being and not doing anything about it, right? So we're utterly dependent upon foreign sources of energy, and then there's a tiny little conflict over there, and they say, we're going to play embargo with you.
Right, right.
And then the world ends, right? And then what happens? You have Paul Paul come along and says, guess what? Unless you want to spiral down into the ground, you're going to deal with the fact that interest rates are now 18%. And so, okay, but we think that kind of thing can never happen again. You know, if you think that our offshoring of oil production into OPEC countries in the 1960s and 1970s, which led to, 1981, if you think that was a disaster, think about what happens when you offshore the production of every single piece of electronic equipment to a communist country.
Right. Well,
You've got things that are coming from there. And then some externality comes from there. And oh, by the way, in the interim 30 years, just like we did before in the 1950s and immediately after World War II, didn't we have this thing called interest rate repression out of the Fed at that time?
Yeah. Well, we have gotten a lot more sophisticated in lying about stuff. I was watching, I was ready to pull my hair out. Four guys, they're supposedly pretty bright. I can't believe these guys didn't cut. There isn't a whisper of inflation, blah, blah, blah. Carl, did they honestly believe that?
You know, I would love to, this whole hasn't been a whisper of inflation nonsense. I don't get this. You know, you can, if you look at, I use Discover to run an awful lot of my household too, because they give me 1% back on everything I buy.
Okay.
I mean, why not, right? I'm going to pay it off at the end of the month anyway. So rather than write a check, I do that. You can go back. They give you an annual thing. So is American Express. So a lot of these other guys. How much did you spend here? How much did you spend here? How much did you spend here? And they categorize it for you. How much did you spend in grocery stores? How much did you spend on this? How much did you spend on... Go pull those things out for the last 5 years and tell me that there's been no inflation.
Well, there has.
You tell me I'm eating more New York strips than I was eating last year? 2 years ago? 3 years ago? 10 years ago? I don't think so.
If you were to live in a place like Chicago, which I wouldn't wish on you, if you go out to eat or like to, if you live alone like I do, so a lot of nights you go, hey, I'll just grab a sandwich somewhere. If you do, it's remarkable because the not only do you have the regular sort of inflation, but you've got the taxing and the
right.
leases. So I mean, if your sandwich and three beers hasn't gone up by 40% in the last 3 years, you're going, I don't know where you're going. Maybe somebody wants
to. Well, you're not living in the real world. And, yeah. you know, here's the other interesting thing. I look at just another thing, another one of these you know, tropes that gets thrown around when it comes to personal wealth and personal finance. We keep hearing, you know, buy a house, real estate is a great investment, right? In virtually all of the so-called developed wonderful world, you have seen property tax burdens in many of these places double over the last 20 to 30 years.
It's doubled the last 8 years.
If you look at that, and then you look at the valuation of your property just with repairs and maintenance, not the new granite countertops you put in, your property value hasn't moved a nickel. Now, here's the problem. With inflation, you've lost 40% of your money.
Sure.
Well, right, and people say, "Well, you know, but it's an investment." No, it's not. It's a consumer durable good. It depreciates. If you don't keep putting money in, it turns into dust.
Well, Carl, if you wanted to say, for instance, instead of saying, "Hey, there's these two idiots and the Stacks and Jacks, is Carl and Chief guys, all they do is bitch about inflation." Let's put them in charge of whatever. And this is what I see. I mean, as much as I like to criticize of how the intelligent people in Washington or New York not realizing that there's a fly in this ointment. That's what I'm criticizing. I'm not criticizing the Bureau of Labor Statistics because I honestly don't know. If you and I were put in charge of a CPI, let's go back 15 years and say, let's say, for instance, that medical care really was 6% of, even then, though, it was way more than 6% of the economy, but say, for instance, it was, and everybody's paying $500 a month for their medical care for family and whatever. And all of a sudden, let's say it was 5%, just make it easy. All of a sudden, in the next 2 years, it triples. All right? So now it's $1,500 a month. But it's only picking up a little bit into the formula because it was 5% to begin with. Now all of a sudden, if they were smart, which they're not, it now becomes 15% of your basket, which, by the way, it still remains 5 or 6. If they made it 15% of the basket and then didn't move for the next 10 years, it actually would show it wouldn't be counted the first time, and now it's not counted at all because it's not counted. It's actually a detractor to the number. So it never actually does get counted. I mean, that's the part that when I look at this, and I, instead of me saying, okay, I can't argue with the month, last month being 0.1 or 0.2 or negative 0.1, Carl. I don't think you can either. We're not all over those numbers like that. But all I can say is, according to you idiots, in the last 10 years, the inflation has been X, and yet I can tell you medical's doubled. I can tell you that, tuition in college is doubled. I mean, the gross numbers are just so far off that they're not even close. So, I mean, I don't know how you go back and redo that, even if you wanted to, which they don't.
Yes, I know. I just, you know, what I keep seeing in this, and what gets me, is that nobody wants to talk about the elephant in the room, which is that every last bit of this is caused by government deficit spending.
Oh, absolutely. Hey, Carl, can you hang on for a sec? Right, come back for a couple of minutes. I got to do a read. We got to do traffic, weather, sports. Luckbox Magazine, the Guide to Money and Profit Probability, is available on newsstands for $7.99 per issue. Stocks and Jocks listeners receive a free digital subscription at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Carl, I don't know if you've ordered yours up, but you probably should. S&P Futures now down 8, and NASDAQ Futures down 35, so we're giving up not even a third of yesterday so far, so a little bit of a comeback, but not much. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you! Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck, get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks,
stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tim Allen. It's Carl Dennehy, Mr. John Neal, Jack Silverman, Matt Weber, full house this morning. S&P futures down 475. As that futures down 23, the spoos have actually rallied $4 during break. They were down 8 when we went to break, but now they're back. Dow down 57. Over in Europe, we've got the, not much action here considering DAX down 10, call that flat. FTSE up 5 or make that 9, call that flat. CAC around down 3, call that flat. So, not exactly rip snorter over in Europe today. It's a Friday in the summertime, I guess. Well, because it doesn't feel like summer in Chicago, but I guess it is summertime. Nikkei down 204, that's full 1%. Shanghai up 14.5%. Hang Seng down 76.3%. So mixed to slightly down over there. We've got oil. Big refinery fire there in Philadelphia now, they're saying. So we got natural gas. RBOB gas is up 7 cents, which is a full 4%, because it's 185. We've got Oil up 36.6%. We got Brent up 85.3. So, and all of gold, which had a huge rally yesterday, $1,490.90. Wow, who'd have thunk it? Silver down 15 cents, 1533. So we're kind of going the different year, but it's a 6-year high, for gold. It, for a combination of, central bank stimulus and Middle East, more money means more dollars and euros chasing the same amount of gold unless Carl runs out in the backyard and digs up another stuff out of his backyard. The money supply has gone up faster than gold, so it's value one versus the other. You guys got for us traffic, weather, sports.
36 minutes past the hour, right on the dot. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Take a look at Chicagoland area expressways, roadways, and tollways. Still having major issues on I-55. That earlier fatal crash that happened earlier this morning, apparently that investigation is clear, and now there's a new crash right near that on the southbound side of I-55. I don't know if they're related, but this is a new crash involving a garbage truck and a semi, and just the left lane is getting by before Route 53 on I-55 southbound. So that has the Stevenson continued to be completely jammed on the outbound side out near Bolingbrook in that area, southwest suburb. So keep that in mind. It's affecting the northbound side as well due to Gaper traffic, so avoid I-55 out in the southwestern suburbs if you can, because they've had all kinds of issues throughout the morning. Dan Ryan, I-57 and the Bishop Porter are looking okay. Traffic building heavily on the Eisenhower, but no accidents to report. Same for the Kennedy. Edens looks good. Suburban tollways are all quiet. Only other issues I'm seeing on the screen here are off the expressways. We have a crash Milwaukee Avenue at Main Street, which is Route 21 up in the northern burbs. But everything else looking good out there. Weather today, lots of sunshine early. Could have some clouds and showers rolling in later on this afternoon. We'll see if that affects the Cub game at 1:20. But right now, looking good. Mostly sunny and 58 degrees, going up to a high of 67. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny with a high of 101 today. But right now, it's clear and 79. In sports, Cubs beat the Mets last night at Wrigley 7-4. Cubs have won 2 in a row. White Sox were off there at Texas later on tonight, 7:05 Central Time first pitch. Diamondbacks lost to the Rockies 6-4. NBA draft, Zion Williamson went number one. No surprise there, out of Duke to New Orleans. Bulls took Coby White out of North Carolina with the number 7 pick. He will be a point guard. He played 1 year at North Carolina. The Suns had 2 first-round picks. They took Cameron Johnson out of North Carolina with number 11. And then with number 24, the Suns selected Ty Jerome out of Virginia. Chief.
How many guys in the top 10 were one-and-doneers?
I can probably look that up quickly, but I would assume at least 50%, maybe more.
Isn't that Spinero with 3 from Duke and 2 from North Carolina?
Well, the second North Carolina guy, I think, was number 11. But
close.
But close, yeah.
John, how are you?
I'm doing good. Good morning. How you doing, guys?
Doing all right. Hey, I just want to shoot back at Kyle here a little bit about his statement that the Chinese don't care about intellectual property. When did we start caring, Carl? I'm not so sure I ever see us care here.
Well, that's essentially the problem, is that we have ignored the rule of law for so long, especially when it comes to antitrust and what it actually says, and we keep coming up with these torch reasons that, the policy is, well, you know what, if you don't like what the statute says, then how come you didn't amend it?
Because I don't think anyone in Congress even knows what those two laws are anymore.
Well, if we don't start actually paying attention to this thing called the rule of law, what you're going to end up with is the rule of the jungle.
Well, and John, pipe in here whenever you want. I just had, John, who just bought yet another small drug company this week? Was it Merck or a Pfizer? One of them did. Was it last week?
Yeah, I can't remember, but yes.
So let me figure this out. We can't just go steal the other guy's stuff. Although we have done that. We did that with, Kodak and Brown Cameron. We did it with, God knows if Alexander Graham Bell even invented the telephone, for God's sake. We used to steal more blatantly, Carl, but now we have a way where the big drug companies and the government, your favorite people, have got together that says for Carl Denninger or John Neal or the chief, if we have a drug that's going to cure, whatever, hangnails or something, it's going to cost us $90 billion to get it through the FDA. So there's only really two people maybe three that can get stuff through there because they bought everybody else. So I'm going to say that even though it's legal, 90%, which is a huge exaggeration, some significant portion of Pfizer or Merck's, quote, research is researching other companies that have something that they don't and saying, you guys will never get it through the FDA, so sell it for us, to us for half what it really should be worth, and that's what we do now. Well, that's perfectly legal, Carl, but I'm not so sure how moral it is.
Well, we do this, and there's one of the biggest threats is not so much the huge mega mergers, you know, the T-Mobile, wants to buy Sprint, right?
Yep.
It's the Facebook buys 40 little companies.
Yes.
And by doing so, destroys any of them that could threaten their business.
Well, that's what, other than maybe the first couple, did Bill Gates ever really invent anything, or did he just buy it from other people? I'm sure he did.
Well, other than MS-DOS.
He did that?
Okay, because he and Paul Allen really did write that for IBM in their garage over a weekend. Okay, but after that, no.
Okay, and let me just... So, I mean, we make the barriers to entry so high that nobody can get in. So, I mean, even though we're kind of bashing Milton Friedman today, I do remember him saying explicitly that no monopoly or cartel can last without government help, one way or the other.
And you know what? Refusal to prosecute is help.
Yeah. Well, you see it in just about everywhere. Jan, do you know of any? Well, there's a couple of biotech companies that seem big enough to withstand the onslaught, but not very many. I have a bunch of clients that know a bunch of doctors and blah, blah, blah. You can only imagine what nationality they are. It's all they do is chase around all these small companies that seem to have a product and try and buy into it thinking somebody's going to buy them. I mean, the thought that the thing will ever make it to market on their own, is it even a thought that the thing could get there on their own?
No, not unless somebody, what I would call, bails them out because all they have is debt and an idea.
Yeah.
And a lot of times what those companies do is end up releasing more shares, to kind of do in hopes of stretching that out a little further, if you follow me. A lot of those end up in heartache in those biotechs, and there's so many of them, so.
But all the good ones just keep getting snapped up on a weekly basis. But you're right, Carl. How do you, in any sort of a formula, you're not talking about the number, somebody with 20% of an industry combining with somebody with 35 that's kind of an obvious one. How do you stop Facebook from...
Well, the first way you stop it is that the minute you hear out of any of these people how we're going to price this based upon how much it's worth in extending someone's life or, the value of someone's life.
Yeah.
Okay. As soon as that becomes part of a pricing formula, they go to prison because that is a declaration that what they're doing is illegal.
Well, how do you ever, I love the fact that things are competitive in some areas. That's why I love trading on the trading floor. I mean, you never had to worry about somebody paying themselves too much. I mean, they either made money or they didn't. And whenever you tell me, or John or somebody who says, hey, this CEO is making $40 million a year, I'm going to say, it's not a competitive industry. Duh. I mean,
because here's the thing. If you are pricing based upon that sort of a basis, okay, in other words, what it's worth to someone, instead of something over whatever your costs are, then what you're saying is you've suppressed competitive entry into whatever market you're in.
Well, sure.
And by doing that, you broke the law, because that's what the law says.
The law that nobody reads and nobody believes in anymore, except you and me.
Correct, but it's still there, and it's been there since 1890. So until people start going to prison, we need to just STFU about the idea that there is something great and holy about what you're seeing in both capital markets and the economy as a whole.
Well, it's
an extraction racket.
Well, who was the guy, Jen, you watch this as much as I do all day, who was the guy a couple weeks ago to get some new product, and they wanted was it $1 million? It was some massive number. It was like $1 million a year or something along those lines for this drug, and or maybe $500,000. Something way beyond even what you and I normally talk about, Carl. And then he launched into this thing about, well, if you have to take care of this person for a lifetime, just what you're talking about. And oh, by the way, we get to do all this other research. And usually, the reason why you get on the street and you buy a cup of coffee for $2, it's because the reason why the guy charges $2, not because he wants to. He would rather charge $5, right? Or 10 or 20.
Right.
The reason why he doesn't is because the guy 40 feet away is charging $2. But he can find all kinds of ways. My son's got to go to college. My daughter's going to God knows where.
But it doesn't college, matter.
Yeah, it does, but that shouldn't matter. But it does. It appears, right? But, I mean, in every industry now, I mean, I can't name, honestly can't name, and even people that are on here that love the new world. John, can you name me 10 competitive industries? I bet you can't. Fully competitive. Other than the corn growing, soybean growing, can't, you could have said the trading floor. Maybe saloons?
It's very difficult to virtually impossible.
To where you're not, I mean, and why would they have these guys in front of Congress? Doesn't somebody say, okay, you got this drug. I mean, Carl, you just said it a minute ago, maybe probably better than me. How much does it cost? Why, between the research? No. If you're telling me that the three guys have to jump in a piranha-filled river and to get this one fish and suck the sperm out of the thing or something, and you got to make it with that, and it costs you four lives and $1 million for every batch of the stuff. Okay, I'm with you. Charge $1,000 a shot, but if really it costs you 48 cents. Now I got a problem, right?
Right.
But they never.
Well, it's like that example where I forget the guy's name, where he bought that company, then raised that drug. I forget how many 1,000%.
Oh yeah, the.
Brought him.
Farmer boy.
That's the same thing. Yeah, exactly. Thank you. Exactly.
Well, the guy with the EpiPen.
Yeah. Well, there's another one, and that's Mylan. That's Mylan. And by the way, you want another example that's even more egregious than those? It's what happened with asthma inhalers.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. The government banned CFCs. They didn't change the active ingredient. They just changed the propellant.
Right.
And the price went from a couple of dollars to like $50.
Well, the EpiPen, they got a patent on the cap. We're gonna stump the cow here, John. Very hard to do. Who originally invented the EpiPen?
Oh boy, I don't know that one.
See, if you listen once in a while, more than you do, I know you do once in a while. our man Lou Michaels, that was originally invented by the military, to where if you went to some place,
auto injectors.
And you somewhere where you're wearing like a hazmat suit and something got through, you could inject through the hazmat suit.
It was probably atropine was what the original military application was.
Probably. And Audrey's friend who's a doctor, she was telling me, I said, Dr. Carroll, won't go into last names. I said, if you give somebody what's in a EpiPen? What's the drug in there? It's a
epinephrine.
Yeah. I said, if you give somebody an epinephrine shot in the office, what does it cost you? She goes, $1.50.
Yeah.
I mean, she goes, the stuff's cheap as hell. It's been on the market. It's generic all over the place. I just put it in a shot and give you a turnover in the butt, there you go, or in the arm, and it's $1.50. I charge you 20, or whatever. That's ridiculous. She goes,
I got I have a client that comes in lucky he has, he's a veteran, so he, goes to the VA for his stuff, but he's given one of these pens because he has severe allergies. And that, now granted it's a 2-pack, but, he pays next to nothing for it as far as his copay, but when he sees on the insurance, it's something like $500 on there.
Yeah.
It's a 2-pack, but it's $500 for that EpiPen.
And so, it's like I say, the cost of it's gotta be, what would you say, Carl? $5, $10, maybe at the time.
Oh yeah, $5 or $10. And and it's funny that you bring up that the military came up with this, because in probability where that was aimed at was, as I said, atropine is antidote for nerve agents.
Right. Yeah.
Okay, because you got guys running around and somebody gasses you. All right. And so, there you go.
Yeah, but but how do you, but here's a formula. I mean, in our whole lifetimes, we're all three of us are kind of the same age. In our lifetimes, how is it that we still have not figured out economically that, you know, if a hula hoop, for instance, comes out and you know, I think we all took economics courses, maybe me, unfortunately, more than... When you came out with something new, okay, say it was the, quote, hula hoop, to show my age, and you sit there and go, okay, I've got the patent on it, or I don't, whether you do or whether you don't. Say you don't. Say there is no patent. The trick is, if I put it out there, and I can make it for a buck, if I price it at like $350, okay, or $3, I can price it at $5 or $10, in which case, you know, somebody's mom might say we're not paying 10, but say at $5, all of a sudden, everybody else who has the ability to make the thing, which is about everything, everybody a plastic hoop, somebody's going to say, wow, that guy's getting $5 for it. I want to be in that business. And goes out and buys the machines and whatever, which cost him money, and he's ready to go in say, a month. But if we sit back, the three of us, the Tom, Chief, and Carl show, and we go, let's produce it at, charge $250 for it. To where it's still, you know, double and a half the price, but still not enough where somebody's going to say, we got to get in that business. So we have our return to our expertise, to our inventive thought, which you always should get, right? The fact is, you invent something first, you should get something for a while. Or else, why would you want to? But if we price it intelligently, maybe nobody ever comes into the business because we're just above where, quote, the competitive part would be. But the minute you say $1,000, nobody's going to buy it, except the part where if it's drugs, usually you're not the payer, the insurance company is. So somewhere in Congress or someplace, there has to be five people, like the three of us could do, go sit at Camp David for the weekend and let's figure this out. Wait a minute. Just because somebody else is paying for it, we can't drive ourselves out of this, you know, cost-benefit sort of thing. Because clearly, when somebody else is paying for it, it doesn't work out the way it's supposed to work out economically. Am I correct?
You're correct. Yeah. Or if somebody is going to die, regardless of insurance, they're going to try to get whatever that medication is,
right,
regardless of insurance costs.
Well, but a lot of it, I mean, if it's a flat-out cure, well, then you almost have to wonder where, I mean, I don't know what would have happened if, I was a little kid, but when, might have been younger than that, but when they came out with the polio vaccine, I mean, they could have, if Jonas Salk, I'm not so sure why he didn't get the, you might know the history better than me, Carl, but if there had been a patent on that, I mean, I'm going to say my parents would have given up a year's salary to get that shot. But do you really want, you know, 80% of the stuff from the entire company's wealth going to one guy? You know, and how would you even deal with something like that? I mean, if somebody came out with a one shot cure for cancer now, what would it be? $2 million?
I mean, and that's the problem.
Well, yeah, I mean, what was when they asked Salk why he didn't get a patent, he said, I mean, a patent in sunlight? He goes, this is a cure for people. How do you patent that?
I think we've also lost our sense of altruism, too, over the years. I mean, I think there's a little bit of more of that going on.
Well, should Jonas...
Obviously, the greed factor has overstepped all this.
Well, I mean, should Jonas Salk be an exceptionally wealthy man and never have to want for the rest of his life? Hell yes. Am I wrong there? I don't think so. Nobody would begrudge the man anything. Does that mean, 50,000 employees like at Merck or some damn place that of course are all on, it's like the, if you're a cousin in Saudi Arabia, for God's sake. I mean, how big of an entourage are we going to go with this stuff?
Yeah, there's a real problem there. The other thing that I have a very serious issue with is that most of the basic research that underlies the so-called new therapies is actually paid for by you and I already because it's coming out of the NIH.
Right, right.
And yet we allow these companies to commercialize this stuff after the taxpayer paid for the research.
Well, how much of, you're the only guy who would know the answer to this question, Carl. How much of Google was it Google that was U.S. government research at Stanford? Is it Google or was it one of those big guys? Stanford owned a part of it?
Well, yeah, there's a lot of game playing with some of the the underlying technologies that make these things work. Okay, so you know the database technologies, you know Hadoop and some of these you know these large cloud based systems. An awful lot of that ultimately does not come back to private sector investment.
Well, how about the military invented the email? So,
well, DARPA. Okay, I mean, you know, the internet that we all use would not exist but for DARPA.
DARPA, tell everybody what DARPA is.
DARPA is Defense Advanced Project Research Agency, which is the organization. The internet, TCP/IP, and all those protocols were originally developed as a way for the military to make sure they could get information back and forth in the event that the Russians and the United States nuked each other to ash.
Okay.
That's right. Why it works as well as it does, by the way.
Okay, so what would happen if out of three different sections of the country, I'd have to run in the Chicago City, I'd never win. You guys have a chance. Jack could run in Phoenix, they'd love him. Carl, I'm not so sure. You might be a little too over the top. What if we all of us, the three of us landed and we're sitting in a saloon in Washington as first year reps and we say, we want to talk about all the stuff we just talked about on this show. Anybody want to talk to us at all?
No, and you know what? I took this, I actually went and had a conversation about, oh, I don't know, it must have been five, six years ago, with a bunch of Senate staffers about this whole, the medical monster eating the economy and eating government, basically. Every one of them knew exactly what I was talking about. They knew that my numbers were correct. They all admitted this. They said, yep, that's what's going to happen. Well, why don't you stop this? Because we'll lose our jobs.
Well, right, yeah.
And that was the answer.
And you, as a freshman, you know, person there, you get to do a lot of that fundraising.
You get across
the street to do the fundraising instead of really doing what your job is.
This was the Senate, which is a little less, you know, because you got six years instead of two, right?
Well, I'm going to say a Senate staffer might be a pretty bright guy. I mean, I would hope they are. I mean, if you went, I don't know if you sat down with a couple of congressmen or even a few senators I could name, they'd know what you're talking about. The staffers probably do.
Well, yeah. Although I will say this, in the Senate, the average intelligence level is considerably higher than it is on the other side of the aisle.
My buddy Robert from the Fed went out and did one of the. He's got his Undertaker suit on and everything, which I give him no one to grief about. He's sitting in front of this huge finance committee thing, and he's talking about Dodd-Frank regarding how futures clearing affects, you know, how you got to make sure that the money's there for Dodd-Bank and the Board of Trade has a run on corn or blah, blah, blah. These guys are really into this stuff. I said, how many guys knew what you were talking about? He goes, the chairman, his two staffers, maybe one or two other guys, because everybody else looked at me where is this? What is this guy talking about? Clearing accounts between the OCC and Chicago, Board of Trade clearing and the Fed and stuff. They're looking at me and they're just glassing over, wishing they were somewhere else. But Carl, thank you very much. John, thank you as well. Matty Weber, Mr. Jack on the board. Good job. SP Futures down 7.25. NASDAQ Futures down 25. A little bit of a blip on yesterday's rally so far. We'll see what happens. Talk about it Monday morning.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
No either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.